Welcome back with the third hour of Issues, Etc. We got audio open lines straight ahead. Did you see 60 Minutes on Sunday night? Boy, they've been talking about this all over the place. Mike Wallace managed to get to Iran, and he got a one-on-one interview. Only Mike Wallace can pull something like this off. A one-on-one interview with the president of Iran. Now, the president of Iran has been making a lot of noise lately about their nuclear capability, about what's going on in Iraq, about what's going on in Israel. All those things are great. But the thing that caught our ear was a bit of audio concerning an 18-page letter that the president of Iran had written to President Bush, saying that President Bush really wasn't acting like a Christian. It's audio open lines for the last hour of today's program. We're coming to you live this Wednesday, the 16th of August. Our call-in numbers, I want your reaction to the audio we play, and I'll have some thoughts to lay on the table as well, 505-7850 or 1-800-730-2727. You can call in or email us anytime with any questions or comments during audio open lines, 505-7850 or 1-800-730-2727, or you can email us issuesetc@kfuo.org. Mike Wallace asked a question about this letter that the president of Iraq had written to President Bush. I'm sorry, Iran had written to President Bush. And the letter was, a rambling 18-page thing. But there's one point that caught our attention. It had to do with the president of Iran's opinion about how good a Christian President George W. Bush was being.
In the letter, you praised Jesus and asked President Bush how he could be a follower of Christ and claim to support human rights, but at the same time, attack and occupy other countries, kill thousands of people, spend billions of dollars on wars, and you urged him, the president, out of respect for the teachings of Christ, to be a force for peace instead of war. Is that so?
That is true. This was a part of my letter.
All right. If President Bush asked you to respond, how should I respond to the president of Iran? What would you tell him he should write back on that particular point? 505-7850 or 1-800-730-2727. You know, the president, President Bush, that is on the record many times referring to Islam as a religion of peace. Now, in Iran, we're talking about Shia Islam. And if the president does, in fact, believe that Islam is a religion of peace, what do you think about this? He could write a letter back and just say, look, yes, you're right. Jesus and his followers ought to be people of peace. And I also agree that you should be a man of peace if Islam is a religion of peace. He's also on the record, I think, saying that Christians and Muslims worship the same God. What do you make of the president of Iran criticizing the president's Christianity? You know, the president really hasn't left himself a lot of room to respond here by saying Islam is a religion of peace and that Christians and Muslims worship the same God. 505-7850-1-800-730-2727. Our in-studio email address is issuesetc@kfuo.org. Now, one of the annoying things about this, of course, is that here is a Muslim telling a Christian how to be a Christian, and the way he understands Christianity is a Christianity of tolerance and love and peace and don't drop bombs, basically a good moral system. Your Christianity is not a moral system. I'm not going to argue whether it's moral or not for the president to do what he's done in Iraq or to do what he's done in the Middle East. That's not the issue. The issue is someone says, well, you say you're a Christian, but you don't do X. You say you're a Christian, but you don't act like Jesus. Christianity isn't about acting like Jesus. Jesus isn't our example. Jesus isn't our Muhammad. You know, in Islam, you could say, hey, you need to act more like Muhammad. And a Muslim might say, you're right, because that's what the religion essentially is about. Do what Muhammad did, do what Muhammad said. But in Christianity, it does show a pretty woeful misunderstanding of what the Christian faith is all about. Christianity is, it's not the Christians trying to be like Jesus or trying to do what Jesus did. Christianity is Christians trusting what Jesus did and what he said. Huge difference, a distinction that sadly is lost on many Christians, not only the president of Iran. 505-7850, 1-800-730-2727. CARE is an organization. It's the Council on American Islamic Relations, an American-based organization of Muslims who have been doing their best since 9/11 to patch up a rather damaged image of Islam, especially here in America. Well, Bill O'Reilly has been using the term, along with a lot of other people in talk radio, Islamic fascism for a long time. CARE objects to this. Here's an interview between Bill O'Reilly and the head of CARE on the term Islamic fascism.
Now for the top story tonight, the Council on American Islamic Relations has written a letter to President Bush objecting to his use of the term Islamic fascist. I use that term as well. Joining us now from Washington is Nihad Awad, executive director of CARE. Okay, are you going to tell me that Iran is in a fascist state and the Mujahideen, the jihadists, are not fascist people? Are you going to tell me that, sir?
Bill, thanks for having me. And allow me first to share with you and your viewers that our organization, CARE, has issued a statement demanding the release of the Fox crew who were abducted or kidnapped today in Gaza. And we pray and hope for their safe return to do their job and back to their families.
Yeah, I just wanted to tell everybody we're not going to have much more on that because we are, you know, in the process of trying to get that solved. But the question of the hour is that your group does not want people like me and President Bush to say the term Islamic fascist. And I submit to you, sir, that's exactly what these killers are.
Okay. And I will agree with you on one point. But also let's remember that President Bush, after 9/11, used the term crusades. Then White House officials retracted that term. Then after that, when we invaded Iraq, we called it Operation Infinite Justice. Then we retracted that term and we called it Enduring Freedom. Now, we could see that inflammatory rhetoric can be devastating to our image and the message we would like to send to the Muslim world. Number one, there's nothing Islamic about fascism, and there is no link between Islam as a religion and fascists.
Let me stop you.
Okay? Go ahead.
That's true. Is there anything remotely connecting Italians with fascism or Germans with fascism? Because those two countries were at one time fascist states, were they not?
And you know what? And they're not Muslim. They were Christian. We never called them Christians. And I'm saying
we said Italy and Germany were fascist states. And right now we're fighting a stateless enemy. But they're all Muslims. 100% of the terrorists that we're facing are Muslims.
Okay, but their actions are not inspired by Islam. And this is very important for you.
Well, what is the jihad then?
Jihad is a legitimate self-defense, like the United States. If it's attacked, it defends itself. But terrorism is not Islamic, and terrorism is not inspired by Islam.
Then why are all the terrorists Muslims?
They are Muslim, but they're not Islamic. Their actions are not inspired by Islam. It's like Islamic art, Islamic philosophy, Islamic...
But they call themselves Muslims. They pray.
Okay.
They believe Allah are commanding them to kill the infidels. So you've got to label them what they are. And I'm going to go back to Iran. Iran's
hold
look. They're
but
the
hold
big
on, hold
problem.
On. Bill, it's very important for me to respond to you here.
All right.
Eric Rudolph is a Christian abortion bomber who has been convicted. He aspires Christianity. He did it in the name of Christianity. You, the Fox, the old mainstream news media will never attribute or claim that he is a Christian terrorist, and you should not.
But the militias, the far-right militias, are fascists, and we call them neo-Nazis.
And they're Christian.
That's right.
And I think Eric Rudolph,
and we call them that.
Christianity. No, you don't.
Yeah,
you don't call them Christian terrorists.
Yeah, we do. No. All the people in Hayden Lake and all those people up there in Idaho, labeled them neo-Nazis, and we told them that they were fundamental Christians. Absolutely, we did.
No, you never called them a Christian terrorist, and you should not. But I want you to reciprocate that respect to Islam and Muslims, because Islam clearly and loudly disassociate itself from these criminals and terrorists.
Yes. The Taliban in Afghanistan, were they not fascists?
They were fascist.
Okay, they were fascists, right?
But they were
practicing Sharia Muslim law.
No. They deviated when they mistreated women, when they did not allow people to go to school.
They did it in the name of Allah.
Yeah, but you and Eric Rudolph, anyone can just claim to do it in the name of Christianity. The other
and
news
then
media
I would
will
label them that
you.
As well. Look, Hitler said he was a Christian,
label.
And he was a fascist. I don't care about that.
Okay. My point here, Bill, is very clearly. We have to enlist Muslims worldwide and here in the United States in this war on terrorism. If we would like to win, we should not alienate them, because mainstream Muslims see themselves as offended.
I don't want to alienate anybody, but I'm not
going to
play a politically correct game in the middle of a war.
It is not politically correct. It is correct not to do it.
We appreciate you coming on, taking the fire.
Thank you
very much.
All right, there's a story from the O'Reilly Factor. What do you think about the president's use of the term Islamic fascists, or others have said Islamofascism? The representative of American Muslims, at least insofar as he does, the head of CARE, says that's not fair. There's nothing in the world, there's no connection between Islam and fascism. Now, I think Bill O'Reilly got close near the end of that interview to the actual point, which is Sharia law. Is Sharia law not only a part of Islam, but also a form of fascism? That's the question he should have asked. Of course, the representative of CARE didn't want much to do with Sharia law. Then one wonders, can one be a good Muslim and denounce Sharia law? From all I've heard, I don't think so. Our call-in number is 505-7850 or 1-800-730-2727. It's Audio Open Lines. You can use our email address, issuesetc@kfuo.org. Jay calls from his car. Hi, Jay.
Hello, Pastor Todd. How are you?
I'm doing well.
I have two things I'd like to say, and the second one's pretty controversial, but I'm not an expert on the Quran or any of those writings, but it occurs to me and some of my friends that the radical Muslims, the fascist Muslims, whatever moniker you want to put on them, they could be the ones that have it right. And by right, I mean more consistent with the religion. And it could be the moderate Muslims who really don't have it right. And by right, I don't mean right and wrong, but and as far as being consistent with the religion. And my second comment, and my daughter, I need to preface this, my daughter and her husband are missionaries. My daughter and her husband are missionaries in Senegal, which is all Muslim, except for a few Catholics. And she disagrees with me on this 100%, but we talk about the difference between who the Muslims worship and who we worship, and that it's not the same God. And if it's not the same God, then you got to ask yourself who it is. And it's my opinion that the Muslims are worshiping the opposite of God.
All right, Jay, thank you very much. Look, you're not going to get an argument from me, I think, on either of those points. Let me offer you something, Jay. If you want to call back up, we can send it to you. You can get your email address or whatever you have. There's an article that I wrote for the Issues Etc. Journal last year about this time, I think, probably called Mere Monotheism. Do Christians, Muslims, and Jews worship the same God? Something along those lines. Oh, is it up on the website? You can go to our website, issuesetc.org, and put in monotheism. probably in our, into our search engine, and you'll be able to find this article. And you might find the reading there interesting. We talked with Ergun Kaner Sunday night on the program. You'll hear this Friday. Ergun Kaner is a Christian now, but he's a former Sunni Muslim from Turkey. And I asked him if you had 5 minutes with President George W. Bush to explain something about Islam, what would you say? And he said, I would tell him that what he's fighting is not terrorism, but Islam. And he said, these people are not terrorists, they're devout. This isn't a political thing, this is a religious thing. Now, I don't know that Ergun Kaner would have said that 2 years ago, but he certainly is saying it now. And he goes along with what you had to say there, Jay, that kind of, I've been asking this question for 2 years. Will the real Islam please stand up? Which is the real Islam? And Ergun Kaner said on Sunday night, look, the devout Muslim, the consistent Quranic Muslim, is the one who is engaged in terrorism. And the one who's sitting in a three-piece suit in New York saying, look, we're a religion of peace and we mean you no harm, those are not the devout Muslims. That's Kaner's opinion. Well, the last caller, Jay, says that the term Islamic fascism is probably fair. What do the rest of you think? 505-7850 or 1-800-730-2727. The Iranian president has written a letter saying that the president of our country, George W. Bush, is not much of a Christian because he doesn't act much like Jesus. Jesus wouldn't be occupying countries and threatening Iran. How would you respond to something like that? 505-7850, 1-800-730-2727. But I got to say, I was really feeling for Awad. Is that his name? Yes, it's Hassan Awad, the leader and the spokesperson for the Council on American Islamic Relations. That's got to be the toughest job in the world. It's amazing. I mean, he's got a jet black hair, and I'm amazed that after several years of dealing with this, the guy isn't completely gray in answering those kind of questions. And you have to hand it to him for being a brave guy to go on something like O'Reilly, and as O'Reilly would say, taking the fire, whether you agree with him or not. Chris writes this from Carson City, Nevada. I read this book about the 1953 coup in Iran called All the Shah's Men. That's funny. Anyways, there's a great part that talks about how the sheikhs were all for supporting Mossadegh, who wanted democracy, until they realized that the government he wanted, the democracy, would limit Islamic rule and allow a secular society, at which point they all began to pull their support from him and side with the Shah. My point is this, Islamic leaders can claim that they're not for fascism all they want, but history does not support this, says Chris in Nevada. Well, okay, let's look at Iran under the Ayatollah, which was what followed, of course, after the Shah was sent into exile. It was a fascist state. We might misunderstand if we think of fascism totally in terms of Mussolini and Hitler. Fascism is a broad thing. It's totalitarian. It's nationalistic. This is what the term is raising, or at least the question that the term is raising, Islamofascism. Are there different kinds of fascism that may even, in fact, look like Sharia law? Steve calls from his car. Hi, Steve.
You know, you were playing that clip from Mike Wallace's interview with the Iranian president.
Yeah.
And it occurred to me that the Iranian president isn't that far from a lot of the people on the Christian religious left.
How so?
Well, think of this. What do they do? They say, well, Jesus wouldn't go to war against Iraq. Jesus wouldn't cut welfare to poor people. They use the exact same logic.
I think that's true. The question, Steve, that still remains unanswered there, and you're not the first to notice that, of course, the question that remains unanswered there is that mere coincidence. I mean, people say the same thing sometimes for entirely different reasons. And in that case, I don't know. 505-7850, 1-800-730-2727. I was actually struck by the fact that in some cases, the guy might sound more like the Christian right than the Christian left. I mean, what does he want? He wants to be able to rule in his country, a virtual theocracy. That is what Islam calls for. Sharia law is theocracy on the streets. It's Allah's will on the streets. It is the Quran, the Hadith, and Sharia law. A straight line. We talked with this about Caner on Sunday night. A straight line down to the streets. Allah's will being enacted on the streets. I don't know what you call that except for theocracy. He doesn't wear a turban. He doesn't wear a sheikh's costume. He wears Western clothes. But he wants in his country, he actually has in his country, what some on the Christian right want in this one, just with a cross instead of a crescent. Jane calls from Arnold. Hi, Jane.
Hi, Todd. Do you remember when Alvin Schmidt was on and taught us the difference between Shiite and Sunni? And he told us that these people that, like, you interviewed, that did the interview from Washington, D.C., the Council on the Islamic, you know, I forget what all the words were about it, he said that they're Wahhabis and that they're just lying through their teeth, everything they say. Do you remember that?
I think I remember it, but I talk to a lot of people, Jane. I'm glad you remember it because...
Well, you know what I did? I bought the tape and I studied it over and over and over. Thank you. I'm going to listen off.
All right. Thank you very much, Jane. Oh, well, Dr. Schmidt is going to be with us tomorrow to respond to some email left over from Sunday night's program at Islam. And maybe I'll remember. I mean, my memory is much worse than Jane's. Maybe I'll remember to ask him that very question about care and... Are we looking at Sunnis or Shiites or Wahhabists when we see American Muslims? Look, I think these are fair questions. I think these are very fair questions to ask of Islam. The problem that the spokesperson for CARE has is not that he and his buddies who make the rounds with the media aren't nice law-keeping peace-loving Muslims. That's not his problem. His problem is he has a hard time making the case that he's speaking for all of Islam. 505-7850-1-800-730-2727. When we come back from this break, we've got a piece from Hannity and Combs. There are those who are scared because they're getting into prophecy. Now, not Bible prophecy, but Quranic prophecy. Apparently, somewhere out there in the apocalyptic world of Islam, there's a concern. Someone's been reading up on Islam, and they've realized that August 22nd, the very day that the president of Iran has promised to give us a response to the, I think it was the UN resolutions calling for them to deal with their nuclear power, August 22nd is the anniversary of the day that Muhammad mounted a winged steed and flew to the moon after visiting Jerusalem briefly and then came back. And there are many who wonder whether or not this day might be significant for terrorist activity. When we come back, we'll find out what I think the military advisor to Fox News has to say on Hannity and Combs about August the 22nd, an Islamic holy day. Then I'll give you some of my thoughts on whether or not the Muslims are watching their calendar or ours. At least the terrorists are watching their calendar or ours. More audio open lines on the other side of this break. It's Issues Etc. coming to you live this Wednesday, the 16th of August, 505-7850, 1-800-730-2727.
Defending the faith, teaching the truth. You're listening to Issues Etc.
Martin Luther is hailed as one of the most influential church reformers of the 16th century. But what kind of ideas drove Martin Luther? How was Luther's theology related to his ideas on politics or philosophy? Luther's World of Thought is our Issues Etc. book of the month for August. This hardback book is $29.99 plus shipping and handling. For more information about Luther's World of Thought, call Concordia Publishing House any weekday during regular business hours, 1-800-325-3040, or visit our website, issuesetc.org. You'll find Luther's World of Thought right there on our homepage, issuesetc.org. Learn more about Martin Luther's world and Martin Luther's thought with Luther's World of Thought, issuesetc.org, or 1-800-325-3040, It's the Issues Etc. Book of the Month for August.
The Week. Now, where did it come from?
Answers with Ken Ham, a popular author and speaker on the authority of the Bible. Ken, is there any basis in astronomy for the seven-day week we all accept around the world?
Well, actually, there isn't. Consider the day. How do we measure a time span of 24 hours? Well, it's based on the complete rotation of the Earth. What about the year? How do we measure this? Well, it's based on the Earth's revolution around the sun. It takes 365 days. Well, what about the month? Well, we all know that the phases of the moon relate to the measurement of the month. Well, then, where do we get the seven-day week? You know what we find? The seven-day week has no basis in astronomy whatsoever. It actually comes from the Bible. Its origin is given in Genesis chapter 1, when God created everything in 6 days and rested for one. And in fact, in Exodus chapter 20, verse 11, the basis of the fourth commandment, God tells the Israelites that they are to work for 6 days and rest for one, based on the creation week in Genesis. By the way, think about this. If God created over millions of years, that would make nonsense of the week. Millions of years work followed by millions of years rest. Doesn't make sense.
Does this also mean that the universe was not created a long time ago, but is perhaps just thousands of years old? That's the intriguing question tackled by our staff astrophysicist, Dr. Jason Lyle. You can read his booklet, which is quite easy to understand, right on our website, answersradio.com.
Larry Rast, Arthur Just, Carl Fakencher, Kurt Marquardt, Peter Scare, Cameron McKenzie.
You probably recognize these names as regular guests on Issues Etc. But what else do they have in common? Well, they're all members of the Christ-centered, cross-focused faculty of Concordia Theological Seminary in Fort Wayne, Indiana.
Dean Wenthe, Walter A. Meyer II, David Scare, Dan Gard, Charles Geeshan, Bill Weinrich.
Have you ever considered the pastoral ministry? Concordia Theological Seminary, Fort Wayne, Indiana. For more information, go to our website, issuesetc.org, or call them 1-800-481-2155. Preparing Christ-centered, cross-focused pastors for the 21st century. Concordia Theological Seminary, Fort Wayne, Indiana.
John Pless, Hal Sinkbile, Richard Muller, Roland Ziegler.
Hello, this is Kay Meyer of Family Shield. A recent study showed that teens with the lowest risk of substance abuse are those who have two parents who eat meals with them, take them to religious services, help with homework, attend their activities, mentor their conduct, give them praise and discipline, and cultivate a loving relationship. Consider these facts as you raise your children.
Family Shield, Saturday mornings at 11:05 on AM 850 KFUO.
Welcome back to Issues Etc. Earlier in the last segment, we were talking about this letter from the Iranian president to President George W. Bush saying, you're not acting much like Jesus would act. LCMS World Relief is out there in the world. They're helping the poor. They're helping people who are in victims of natural and man-made disasters. And believe it or not, they're not doing it because they're trying to act like Jesus did. They're not trying to do what Jesus did. They're doing it because they trust what Jesus did, and they're delivering what Jesus did for us all, his perfect life, his death, and his resurrection, along with that aid. That's why we say it's Christ-centered, cross-focused relief efforts through LCMS World Relief. Their toll-free number is 1-888-930-4438. You can use that number to donate. 1-888-930-4438. Or you can find them at our website, issuesetc.org, issuesetc.org. What are you looking for? You're looking for Pastor Matt Harrison and LCMS World Relief. It's audio open lines this Wednesday, August the 16th. Our call-in numbers, 505-7850 or 1-800-730-2727. And our in-studio email address, issuesetc@kfuo.org. Couple of questions I've laid on the table, then we're going to go back to some more audio. First of all, how would you respond to the criticism leveled by the Iranian president against President Bush that he's not acting much like Jesus by occupying countries and mixing things up in the Middle East? And if he really were a good Christian, he would show love instead of drop bombs. 505-7850, 1-800-730-2727. What do you think of the president's term? Seems to be newly adopted. He's used it at least once publicly. Islamic fascism. Has he gone too far? Is it about time? What do you think? 505-7850 or 1-800-730-2727. You can email us as well, issuesetc@kfuo.org. As promised, here's a segment from Hannity and Combs earlier this week on the question of August the 22nd and whether or not we ought to be especially worried about terrorist attacks.
Should the United States and Israel be on high alert 2 weeks from today? President Mahmoud Ahmadinejad has implied that he will give his final answer to the U.S. about his country's nuclear program by August 22nd. Now, August 22nd also has great significance on the Islamic calendar. It's a day when Muslims believe the Prophet Muhammad rode a winged horse first to Jerusalem and then to heaven and back. So is it possible that Iran will flex its nuclear muscles on that date? Joining us now is Fox News military analyst Colonel David Hunt. And Colonel Hunt, do you place any significance on that date? Do we believe that Iran will take action based on the date August 22nd?
I think Iran, Alan, has taken action for years. They've taken it in with Hezbollah in against Israel. They've taken it against us every day. They've killed Americans in Iraq. So, yeah, I take everything that wingnut says very seriously, whether it's the 22nd, but we've been at war. We've been at this World War III for a long, long time. It's time when the rest of us woke up. So high alert, I'm afraid, is going to be here for a while. And this war we're in with terrorists like the nation, like Iran, is here to stay.
Are we at war with Iran? According to the Fox News military analysts, we're at war with Iran. I didn't know that. I imagine the president might be kind of surprised to find that one out, too.
Did you get the memo on that?
No, I did not get the memo on the fact that we're at war with Iran. I mean, he might have misspoke. I don't know. I find it a little irritating that that we would say, well, you know, what is the president of Iran promised to do? He said on August 23rd, he's going to tell the world what they're going to do in response to the world's concern about their nuclear program. That's what he said. He's going to give his final answer. He has not made any threats. I don't think it will win anyone any credibility if we say, watch out. That's a veiled threat. And he hands out a half sheet of paper saying, here's what we're going to do. And nothing happens. Now, could something happen? Yes. In fact, we had an emailer, I believe, during our Sunday Night Issues, etc. conversation with Ergun Kaner, again, a former Turkish Muslim, a Sunni. He is dean of Liberty Theological Seminary, and author of several books, including Unveiling Islam. And he and his brothers have just written all over the place. He's testified in Washington D.C. about Islam early on after 9/11. And one of our emailers said, "Look, what about this August 22nd date? It's an Islamic commemoration. It's an Islamic holy day. Are you worried about this? Should we be worried about this?" And Kaner's response was, again, now this is his opinion, but speaking as a former Muslim, he said, look, I think they're watching our calendar more than they're watching their calendar. And or watching other people's calendars, not the Christian calendar so much, but the example he cited was Yom Kippur. He said they tend to attack, say, Israel on significant Israeli days rather than on days significant to Muslims. So his general response was, I think they're paying a lot more attention to our calendar than to theirs and don't read a lot into the symbolism of their calendar. So are you concerned about August 22nd? I mean, in spite of what Ergun Kaner had to say, do you plan to do anything different? 505-7850, 1-800-730-2727, or issuesetc@kfuo.org. You can, by the way, hear that entire interview with Ergun Kaner and a subsequent hour with Dr. Alvin Schmidt on Islam Friday on Issues, etc. And we're going to be talking with Dr. Schmidt tomorrow, too, answering some questions via email and your phone calls as well about Islam. We've talked about Plan B a number of times here on the program. If you're not up to date, it is It's called Plan B. That's the actual marketing name for the thing. But it is a high-dose contraceptive. It's being marketed, it's being considered by the FDA for over-the-counter sales, that is, non-prescription sales, as emergency contraception. That's what they're calling it. A woman has unprotected sex. They take this double dose, I think it might even be a quadruple dose, of whatever's in the birth control pill, and everything's taken care of. The FDA is getting ready to do something on this called a compromise. Madeline Brand on National Public Radio spoke with NPR's Julie Rovner about the possible compromise on making the morning after pill Plan B available over the counter. And what's been holding up the decision at the FDA for so long?
Women who need the morning after pill may be able to get it soon without a prescription. A compromise is in the works that would allow over-the-counter sales of the drug Plan B to women over 18. It's been a 3-year battle. I spoke earlier with NPR's Julie Rovner. I asked her first to remind us how Plan B works.
It's really just 2 high doses of regular birth control pills. It works very effectively to prevent pregnancy if it's taken within 72 hours of unprotected sex. But time is of the essence. It works better the sooner you take it. And that's the main reason that backers want it to be available without having to go to the doctor first.
And that's been held up for a long time. And a compromise has been reached recently. Tell us about that.
Well, this is a compromise that we think is going to happen. What appears to be likely is that the FDA will approve this over-the-counter without prescription for those age 18 and over. Those younger than 18 would still have to get a prescription before they could get this. So there'll be a lot of restrictions on how it's going to be available. It will be kept what's called behind the counter, just at pharmacies and clinics. So in other words, you'll have to ask for it.
And you have to be 18 or over.
And you have to be 18 or over.
So is everyone happy?
Well, no. Obviously, the manufacturer had originally proposed to have it be over-the-counter for everyone. There's a particular interest in teenagers who are fairly high users of this. There were some worries that it might encourage teenagers to have more sex because they could then have a backup method of birth control. But scientific studies have shown that that seems to be unlikely. That's not the way it gets used. There was then concern about younger teens, those under age 16, and there really weren't any studies looking at those. And that was what started this sort of 2-year decision. Will the age be 16? Will it be 17? And now it seems to have come to 18.
There is some kind of logic, I assume, behind making this available for women only over the age of 18 and by prescription, because birth control pills are available only by prescription. And isn't Plan B made up of the same ingredients?
It is, and this is sort of an interesting question, and it's something that the FDA's scientific advisory committees looked at fairly closely. But the reason it is considered safe without a prescription, while regular birth controls are not, is that side effects of the regular pill happen over a long-term period. It happens from taking it every day, and this obviously isn't something intended to be taken every day.
And Julie, this has been going on for years, this struggle over making Plan B available. What's the holdup?
Well, the holdup appears to have mostly been politics. There's been politics on both sides. There have been conservatives, religious conservatives, who've been concerned that making it available to teenagers in particular might encourage teenagers to have more sex, even though studies have suggested that that's not the case. There are also concerns from some anti-abortion groups that the pill could work as an abortifacient by preventing a fertilized egg from implanting in a woman's uterus. Now, that's not the medical definition of pregnancy, and the FDA does classify this as a contraceptive, not an abortifacient. But there has indeed been a lot of pressure around that, and there have been some suggestions that political considerations rather than scientific considerations that has held this up, that this bill is being given basically a double standard. It's being treated not simply as a scientific and medical question, but as a moral question.
And so when will we be able to actually see Plan B available at pharmacies, albeit behind the counter and for women aged 18 and over only? When will that happen?
Well, we've been sort of led to believe by both the company and the FDA that a decision could come very quickly, perhaps as soon as next week, and it could then be available in the next couple of months.
NPR's Julie Rovner, thank you.
All right, that's the story from National Public Radio, and I guess we await the FDA's decision if they're going to come to this compromise. Now, that was a valuable report in at least one sense. First of all, they explained, it doesn't satisfy me in any way whatsoever, but they explained the big question that had been looming in my mind since we talked with Wendy Wright of Concerned Women for America about Plan B last time. Wendy Wright pointed out that never before has the FDA, this is one of our sound bites of the week, I think, couple weeks ago. Never before has the FDA proposed that a drug be offered over the counter, that is without a prescription, at a high dose, but with a prescription at a low dose. Usually it always works the other way around. You can get a low dose of a drug without a prescription, but to get the high dose in these cases, you'd have to have a prescription. I mean, all of us, whether you suffer from allergies or whatever, all of us have watched drugs move from prescription. Remember, you could only get it by prescription, and now it's over the counter. Why? They just lower the dose a little bit, and then they sell it over the counter. We've all watched that happen, okay? But in the case of the morning after pill, the FDA is actually considering the fact that they would have the morning after pill, which is a high dose, without a prescription, while birth control pills are still required to have a prescription. And I was asking, I asked you, we did it during audio open lines, we did it during soundbite of the week, how can this be? Well, they answered that question. They said, well, the reason that the birth control pill would still need a prescription is because it's used every day over long periods of time. And the reason that the Plan B pill would not require a prescription is because they anticipate that women will only be using it occasionally and not over long periods of time. Now, wait a minute. There's a woman out there having unprotected sex, and she knows she carries this pill in her purse. She knows that she can have unprotected sex and use the morning after pill. And high dose of hormones that, I mean, anyone who knows anything about hormones knows that this is tricky stuff. You don't fool around with it. She knows she can have high, unprotected sex and use the pill, and voila, all is taken care of. Do you really mean to tell me that you offer this over the counter to anyone over 18, and there aren't going to be women out there who don't carry a bottle of these things with them and use it on a regular basis? Maybe not every day, no, but it is a massive dose of the hormone. It seems unrealistic. The use is entirely at the discretion of the person who buys it. It might say on the bottle or on the box, you know, don't take this more than once a day for 5 days in a row. But do you really expect a woman who's had unprotected sex to pay attention to that if she's afraid she's going to get pregnant? Even though that's the explanation, it still boggles my mind. One of the things that stuck out in that piece also was the way it began. Just a little word. Women who need the morning after pill. It's kind of like talking about women who need an abortion.
Women who need the morning after pill.
All right, there it is. I need, say I got cancer. I need chemotherapy. I need radiation treatment because if I don't get it, I might die. I've got high blood pressure. I need my high blood pressure medicine, or I might have a stroke. I've got bad blood sugar. I need my glucophage. Otherwise, I might become diabetic or fall into a coma. That's a need. But the morning after pill is not a need. They might want, but there's a difference between wanting and needing. You know, that's a big, that alone says a lot about the way we look at this now. Pregnancy is a condition to be prevented at all costs, and even akin to a disease that needs to be treated. 10 minutes left in audio open lines today. Our call-in numbers and our phones are wide open, 505-7850 or 1-800-730-2727. Four issues on the table with you for your comments. Iran's president accusing President Bush of not being a good Christian, not being enough like Jesus would be. Is the term Islamic fascism fair? And are you going to be doing anything different on August 22nd, this Islamic holy day, wherein some anticipate a heightened danger of terrorist activity? And if you want to chime in on the FDA's compromise plan for Plan B, feel free to do so also, 505-7850 or 1-800-730-2727, or email us at issuesetc@kfuo.org. Tomorrow on the program, multiculturalism will be the subject. Pastor Keith Burda will be our guest. We'll also talk with Pastor Dan Foisey about prayer, and Dr. Alvin Schmidt, as I've mentioned several times here, will be joining us to discuss Islam. Paul calls from his car. Paul, welcome to Issues, Etc.
Thank you, Pastor Todd. Hey, I just wanted to have a comment or maybe pick your brain on that woman's effects of that morning after pill. That wasn't mentioned at all in that NPR report, what types of things the 18-year-old or above would be having if they're using that high dosage of a pill. Maybe you could give me your comments. I'll listen offline.
All right, Paul. I'm no doctor, and I'm not a woman, so my level of expertise here is nil. What do I know? I know that women who are going through menopause, there are all sorts of effects of a lack of or too much of female hormones. I know that the birth control pill, which is exactly the same drug at a lower dose than the Plan B pill, is considered to have potential side effects great enough that it's sold only with the prescription. And then, as we've talked with, I think, doctors from the Christian Medical and Dental Association, I think they pointed out before to us on the air that we were talking about Plan B, an emergency contraceptive. They say when the birth control pill, which is the same drug, when the birth control pill is being designed by the drug makers, they operate on the principle of the lowest effective dose. Not overkill. There's no overkill in the drug industry. They want to give the lowest effective dose. They want a certain effect. And so they find what dose at its very lowest renders that effect in the most possible people. This is the way the drug industry works. Lowest effective dose. Why? Drugs are expensive. You can make a lot of money selling lower doses than you can selling higher doses. So, why would they have lowest effective dose of something that's prescription, and then when they turn around and want to sell it over the counter, it's overkill? It's ultra high doses. The most troubling thing to me, Paul, is, and it was mentioned in this NPR story and then kind of left behind, is that if this is being offered, they're saying, the FDA says, we'll offer it without a prescription for people only 18 years old and older. That does not solve the problem that they have not done any studies on the effect of the morning after pill on girls. You know, we used to call them girls. Anyone under 18, minor children, girls, they haven't done any studies on the effect of the morning after pill on them. Now, right, you can sell it by over the counter to someone who's over 18. They'll have to show their driver's license to prove that they're 18. Fine and good. What's to stop someone's older sister from going in and buying it over the counter and then giving it to her 15-year-old sister to use? If you've got kids who are over 21 going in to buy beer for 16-year-olds, you're going to have people who are over 18 going in to buy the morning after pill for 16-year-olds. And no studies have been done on the effect of the morning after pill on minor children. I just think you're living in a fool's paradise if you think, if you're sitting in the FDA or if you're advocating for this, and you think that just because you come up with this compromise where the prescription is, well, you got to be 18 to buy it without a prescription, that it's not going to fall into the hands, be put into the hands intentionally of girls. 505-7850, 1-800-730-2727. And the FDA is supposed to be safeguarding our health and our well-being by regulating foods and drugs and what we drink and things like that. And this seems to be wanton disregard, at least for the health and the well-being of those on whom this drug has never, ever, ever been tested. Still time for your phone calls and your email, issuesetc@kfuo.org or 505-7850 or 1-800-730-2727. few final thoughts here on Islamofascism. You know, we use the term here because it's a descriptive term. I think we need to ask a few questions about Islam. We know what fascism is. We know what it looks like. And what the reason people have started using the term Islamofascism is because they look at what the situation that prevails on the ground in some Muslim countries, and they say, that looks like fascism to me. Sharia law, as it's enacted on the streets, looks like fascism. Now, it is, in fact, of religious origin. And so they say, if it is part and parcel of Islam, if Sharia law is part and parcel of Islam, and Islam, as it expresses itself in Sharia law, ends up looking an awful lot on the street like fascism, then can we talk about Islamofascism? Are there no religious elements in this in the fascism that we see in the Islamic world? There certainly are. Now, the question of terrorism is an entirely different thing. I think when we talk about Islamofascism, the first thing that ought to come to mind is not Osama bin Laden out plotting to blow up planes. That's the question of terrorism. That's a separate question. Is there a relationship between terrorism and Islam? Separate question. But as to the question of whether or not there's a relationship between Islam and fascism, look, whether you want to call it fascism or not, the only way to answer that is to say, when Islam has its way politically in a government, that is, when it gets its way, like in Iraq, where according to the Iraqi constitution, Sharia law is the law of the land, and even the constitution, as it's written, will bend where Sharia law makes its demands. What do you end up with under that kind of a constitution? What do you end up with in Saudi Arabia or Iran or any other Muslim country? The leaders may not call themselves fascists. They might not wear brown shirts. That's irrelevant. They might not look like Hitler or Mussolini. But are the people living under a fascist regime? Sunday night on Issues, Etc., Rapture Theology, Dr. Reed Lessing of Concordia Seminary is going to be our guest. Friday, a two-hour conversation on Islam with two of our very best guests when it comes to that subject, Dr. Ergun Kaner and Dr. Alvin Schmidt. Tomorrow on the program, you get a chance to hear Dr. Alvin Schmidt answering some of our email about Islam. We'll also talk about prayer with Pastor Dan Foisey and multiculturalism with Pastor Keith Berda. We'll also have Issues, Etc. Soundbite of the Week for you to play tomorrow on the program. Tonight at 8, tune in for our first hour's rebroadcast. We talked about evolution with Pastor Ron Boggs and the Book of Revelation with Pastor Carlton Hine. I'm Todd Wilkham. Thanks for listening to Issues, Etc.
Listen weekday afternoons to Issues, Etc. Issues, Etc. is a listener-supported program. Your financial support is critical for the continuation and expansion of this worldwide outreach. Our address is 85 Founders Lane, St. Louis, Missouri, 63105. You can donate by credit card on our resource line, 1-800-737-0172, 1-800-737-0172. For a free audio copy of this hour of Issues, Etc., please visit the audio archive section at KFUO.org. Opinions expressed are not necessarily those of AM 850 KFUO. Issues, Etc. is a broadcast service of the Lutheran Church, Missouri Synod.